saw the game-winning play once, but have to replay it 3 times on the way back to the hotel. Because some moments don't end at the buzzer. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
Everybody, welcome back. It is Inside Boxing Live presented by PPV.com. It is Dan Canobio. It is Chris Algieri. It is post-Vegas. I am exhausted, but I am so ready to talk about Canelo Alvarez's week, his fight on Saturday night, preview Anthony Joshua, proper heavyweight fight with Anthony Joshua and Daniel Dubois. A proper 100,000 at Wembley Stadium. Chris, how you feeling, man? Vegas was an awesome time. We did everything. I hope everyone enjoyed the content because I sure as hell loved making it. How you feeling, my friend?
I'm good. I'm still recovering for sure. So for everyone at home, one of the sociopathic tendencies that are out there are that they enjoy red eyes. I'm a red eye flyer, so I fly red eyes. So fight night. If we end early enough, we finish our post shows, I run it to the very last second. If I can make that red eye, there's an 11:55 out of Vegas to Fort Lauderdale. If I can make that on fight night, you damn well know I'm going to make it. So we did our post-fight shows. I didn't expect the fight to go the distance. It did. Hats off to Berlanga. Fought a very tough fight. Showed a lot of grit. So fight goes the distance. We have our post-fight show. I have to do my post-fight show for ProBox TV. And then I'm like, you know what? I can still make it. I sold a pack, too, by the way, Dan.
What?
I sold a pack.
Well, that's kind of a rookie move. I pack the night before.
I'm just crazy like that. I'm going to make it.
You enjoy, like, you didn't pack on purpose.
I like the rush.
Yeah, give yourself an extra challenge.
Yeah, did you see my shoes, my loafers? You think I can move fast on those? No. Those are for style, bro. Those are for style. That's not for function. So I'm wearing these loafers, which people at home. So I got these loafers. I'm not going to be moving quick. So I'm handicapping myself. Pants are tight. I'm handicapping myself.
You're going to split if you ran.
No, actually, I can high kick in those. You're good. Don't worry. Trust. I can always high kick in my pants. I don't care how tight they look. I can kick you in your fucking head. I keep that under wraps. That's a Van Damme move. I learned that in the 80s.
Front kick. You know what's funny is we went out after the fight to XS Nightclub for Marab, the guy who fought at the Sphere, who beat Sean O'Malley.
The new champion and the new. Yeah.
We went to his post-fight party. We ended up there, and me and Mitch, our super producer, were laughing because I think by the time we got back to our room, you were probably landing.
I was like an hour later. I saw something you posted, and I was like, oh, this guy just got back.
Yeah, I was going hard. I was still in my suit. It was a great week. We had so much fun covering Canelo fights.
I had so many people texting me like, "Hey, where are you? What are you doing?" I'm like, "I'm literally on a plane. Like, I'm out."
That's nuts. That's crazy. I kind of wish I was in my own bed on Sunday morning, but the after party was actually a lot of fun.
I was watching football. I was having beers. I was chilling. I took like 6 naps. I was just like intermittent napping all day long.
I need a nap. Vegas is crazy, man. It's a long, long week. Not that anyone cares, but I love doing the job, and I hope everyone
enjoys so much fun.
The PPV stuff. I think, not that I think, I know that we have something special going with PPV.com. The best fight week coverage between me and you and Lampley and Lance Bugmeyer and all the content that we're pushing out. Best fight night coverage. Live interactive chat. Where else can you watch a fight with Jim Lampley and Chris Algieri? I mean, that's amazing. I was in there too, doing my thing.
And the best telling post-fight. Old stories, like it's crazy. It's awesome.
Right,
so
the
much
best
fun.
Post-fight coverage after the fight. We bring you lives from ringside, and Jim gives his thoughts and everything. So make sure you stream Joshua versus Dubois on Saturday night on PPV.com. Keep this party rolling. They're the best. You can stream it to everywhere. No subscriptions. We love PPV.com. Chris, also, you know what today indicates? Today is a very special day for me and the show because today marks 7 years of Inside Boxing Live. I started this show on the Monday after Triple G Golovkin. No, that's the same guy. I started the show on the Monday following Canelo Triple G 2017 in a garage on Long Island, in Bellport, Long Island, to be exact. It's been a long 7 years. It's been a great 7 years. Never took a week off. Did the show forever by myself. Added Chris Algieri 2 years ago in 2022. Joined John Boy Media.
Right around this time as well.
Right around this time. 2 years since Chris Algieri joined.
Because our first, because you know what's funny also? Our first live show that we did, that like a fight event, was Canelo Triple G 3.
Right. Life is all about, is a full circle. Joined John Boy Media, left John Boy Media, joined PPV.com. Now we are taking over the boxing world. Since you joined, it's been taking the show to another level. I just wanted to thank everyone. You know, I got a lot of nice messages once I posted that, some day one listeners. The first couple shows were crazy. I would do three guests. I would do it by myself. I had like Roy Jones, Jim Bland. I would go crazy booking guests. Because I was doing the show by myself and I just wanted it to be amazing. And it's been
for the listeners at home, that's really difficult to do. Fighters are really hard to nail down, especially in a specific time frame. I had to do that for my book. So I had that feeling of trying to get guys down, and that's not like a weekly show kind of thing. I just had to get them eventually, but it was really hard. It's like herding cats when you're trying to get fighters to do set interviews and times.
Bro, I remember Danny Jacobs. I was like, hey, can you join the show? He's like, yeah. Connelly sets it up. And I'm like, he's like, what time? I was like, 10:45. He's like, AM?
AM? Yeah. I said, no.
Yes. Well, Danny doesn't get up till 1 p.m. I was like, well, that's a problem. Or like Keith Thurman one time, like, he called in like 3 hours later. Or yeah, the beginning days were fun. And then we slowly ironed it out to just do maybe a not live show. And then just got rid of guests altogether, because from what I've heard, everyone just likes hearing from us two guys just chatting about boxing. One happens to be a world champion, the other happens to be an idiot. So
I have a nice, well, you're not quite an idiot, thank you. But I do. So I remember we had done a couple of shows together, and I had come to the office, I came to John Boy once when I was in town, and did a couple call-ins a few times, like over the years, whatever. And because we're Long Island boys. We're Paisans, you know, we got that going. But then you asked me like, hey, would you be all interested in doing, you know, like a weekly show as like a guest host or as a host.
And host, I was like, joining the show.
Yeah. And I was like, I can swing that. And then it was our second show, and it was our second week. Cause we were doing one a week.
Yeah.
It was our second show. And the first shows were good. They were like really good right off the bat, because we had a great rapport, whatever. When we do our research, and I said to you, I'm like, Dan, I'm like, pretty soon, dude, this is all you're gonna have to do. This is the only job you're gonna have to have. Guys at home, I told them that after two episodes, and then not even 2 years later, Dan is a full time Inside Boxing Live podcaster.
It's crazy, man. It's been a hell of a ride. It's awesome. I love doing it. Thank you to everyone. Thank you to Nick Canobio, Bob Canobio, Ronnie Jerez.
Yes, Mitch, Ronnie. Can't forget about Ronnie.
And Mitch Matassia, who is all the producers. Those are all my producers over the years. You guys are awesome. And thank you,
Mitch. I know I mess with you a lot, but I love you, bro.
And most importantly, thank you to everyone who listens. We couldn't do the show without you. All right, enough of that. Let's get into what we want to talk about. Canelo, we did do our post-fight show, but that's like such in the moment where I'm like got the adrenaline rolling, and I've had 48 hours to think about it. Canelo Alvarez is still damn good. 80% of Canelo Alvarez is still the elite at 168. It's still the elite top five in the sport. That left hook, I watched it over and over and over, is so freaking powerful and so crafty that I think he can do that to even the Benavides of the world. I think he could still do that to the upper echelon fighters in boxing. I think at the time, it's tough when you're at the top, Chris, and you find little ways to criticize. You can poke holes in a fighter. But 48 hours later, I'm talking about a guy who's 34 years old, close to 70 fights, 500 career rounds, face of the sport, has to deal with all that. He's still freaking good. It's still really good, but still favor him over just about everyone outside of maybe Dmitry Bivol at 175. So that's my biggest takeaway a couple of days later. Is Canelo Alvarez, yes, slowing down, but still, man, at the top of his game, it's still so much fun to watch, still powerful.
Got into a big argument with Paulie Malignaggi yesterday on Pro Box TV regarding this. I kept getting asked when I was in Vegas, people were like, why does Paulie hate Canelo? And Paulie doesn't hate Canelo, but he does like to push back on everything, which I appreciate because he does deserve some pushback with, you know, holding the belts hostage. But listen, in terms of what he is, I told Paulie yesterday, I'm like, dude, as soon as this guy retires, you're going to miss him.
Yes.
Like, he's excellent. And yes, is he older? Yes. Is he slowing down? Absolutely. He's an old 34. He's a 34 going on 38. The decline is there. He's a different guy.
I don't see him falling off a cliff anytime soon.
No. But he's declining. He's certainly declining. You're the numbers guy. You know how many punches he throws. I think the Canelo of old gets Berlanga out of there. I think the Canelo of old gets Charlo out of there. I think Berlanga of old gets, you know, all of these Munguia out of there. You know, this is a different version. Yes, he can still throw the fastball, but he's not going to do that many innings. There is a marked slowdown with him in the fight. He comes out guns blazing in the beginning of the fight, man. Dude, Dan, he was throwing fucking bombs. Bombs, heat. Where I was like, whoa. End of the fight, last five rounds is not the same. Here and there, intermittent spurts. There's no consistency. He can't sustain the energy. He doesn't even jab anymore. He doesn't really jab in between. It's not like he's like building. It's just everything is just loading up and just looking for the shot and then hoping to hurt you. And then he comes with combinations. Only time with those combinations is if you're hurt and he's trying to finish you. But you know what it is? Like he's it's never entertaining.
Yeah, it's very entertaining. It was an entertaining fight. He's never been a high volume guy. I think he's, you know, in his heyday threw about 50 punches around and then it dipped down to under 40. And this fight was around 35 to 40 again.
But that's a big dip from 50, dude.
Yeah, but I'm talking like 50 was like his 140, 147, like early days. Like he was never – remember that the knock on Canelo was always like, oh, he takes rounds off or he takes portions of rounds. He can't fight a full 3 minutes. That was always the knock on him early on before the Golovkin fights where he won everybody over and became the face of boxing and even won over his own fan base. He wasn't this huge Mexican star early on in his career. The Mexican fans didn't like the way he fought. They didn't like that he didn't stand and trade. They didn't like that he moved. They didn't like that he took rounds off. But after that second Golovkin fight where he stood his ground is when he won over all the Mexican fans and it became Canelo Alvarez that we see today. But he kind of reminds me of Pacquiao and later on Pacquiao's career. Pacquiao lowered his punch volume like crazily. He lowered it down to like 40 punches around from 70. And he became more accurate. There's no doubt about it that Canelo is accurate still. I mean, we're looking at 50% of his power shots. That's like Mayweather levels. And he's still powerful. He's still dropping guys. He just doesn't have the finish anymore. Like, I would not be shocked if he goes the rest of his career without getting a stoppage win. Maybe over Crawford, because Crawford is just, you know, smaller. He's definitely not going to stop the B-balls. And if he goes up to 175, don't think he'll stop Benavidez. He just doesn't have that anymore. And that's fine. I mean, you're just watching Father Time take over. You're not watching a guy that is a clean fighter for the most part, and is just doing it the right way and is still selling out arena. The arena was packed. I mean, they did he went up against UFC and defeated them in certain ways and is still on top of his game.
I love when Turkey said UFC is going to eat Canelo that weekend. Yeah, well,
yeah, that was dumb. That was
didn't get eaten. You wasted foolish. Your money.
They look. I mean, the spear looked awesome. I don't know the financials of it. It's not my lane. But Canelo, just let it be known, that weigh-in was absolutely mobbed. Yep. All fight week was mobbed. Fight night was mobbed. Canelo is still the man at age 34. All right, we are done with the adulation of Canelo. Now we talk about what he could do next, because that's what all we do here as media members. Like, how much longer can he take on the Berlangas? How much longer can he take on the Munguias? I rewatched the Munguia fight last night because it was streaming on ESPN. I saw your face too, bro. You were on this Munguia special. Mm-hmm. Did you know that?
I didn't know that.
I'm sure you did know that. It was awesome to watch who fights this weekend. I mean, Munguia. I rewatched Munguia Canelo, and I thought Munguia like put up a really good fight. Way better fight.
Yeah, I mean, first three, four rounds, he looked excellent.
Yeah, Munguia put up a better fight than Berlanga. Berlanga still put up a good fight. How much longer can Canelo fight the Berlangas? How much longer can Canelo fight Munguia? Is he looking at a Mobili? Is he looking at a Chris Eubank? I just don't know if that Bivol fight ever materializes. That would interest me, and that would get a lot of people excited. Obviously, the Benavidez fight gets a lot of people excited. I'm just curious how the rest of his career goes, because I feel like, I wouldn't say autopilot, but it just doesn't have the same like sizzle, his career. Like, we're watching, now we're watching a legend. We're tuning in to watch a legend. It's almost required viewing if you're a boxing fan to watch him and to take it all in. But it's just like, does he still want the challenges? Does he still want the biggest paydays? Like, is it going to be Crawford, which he would have to retract a lot of the things that he said in the past? Like, I'm just very curious how he lands the plane the final 2 or 3 years of his career, or however long he fights.
Well, he does not mind, you know, going back on his word. We know that. You know, I'm not going to fight a Mexican. He fights Munguia, who is more Mexican than Benavidez. So he goes back on that. I think he would go back on the Crawford fight if it made sense, if he had trouble finding a dance partner. But I don't think he does. I think the next fight's Mumbili. And he's another undefeated guy. He's another Berlanga of the world. Undefeated, young, stiff challenge. And it's almost as if Canelo is on his retirement tour already. Mm-hmm. In terms of the kind of guys that he's fighting, but you know, he's fighting undefeated younger guys, younger bigger guys. So he's taking it in as like, well, I'm fighting these younger bigger guys. You got to give me credit, and I'm fighting them back to back, and I'm going out there and I'm outclassing these guys. The problem is that all of us want specific fights. We want to see the best guys in the world, not the on paper tough guys. Not the guys that are going to make your record look great. Because when we look back at his record, you're going to see 42-0. You're going to see 28-0. You're going to see 30. You're like, wow, this guy only fought undefeated guys. You know, he's taking O's all over the place. But the reality is, we want to see one fight and one fight only. Maybe two. If you want to put David Morrell in there too. But yeah, but now that those guys are out of the weight class, you deal with what you got in front of you. And right now, what you got in front of you is Christian Mumbili. You've got Caleb Plant making a strong push to get a rematch. You've got Jaime Munguia, depending on how he looks this weekend, a strong push for a rematch. You know, you've got the Crawford mega super fight, you know, looming, which is always a potential. But I don't think he does it. I think he goes Mumbili. And the landscape of these weight classes change so fast. When you fight twice a year, a lot can happen in 6 months between now and the Mbili fight. He fights Mbili in May. The next fight's going to be in September. A lot can happen in that time. You never know. You got Chris Eubank. He wants to go to England. He wants to do his Sugar Ray Robinson Europe. Did you remember that? You know about that, Dan? Sugar Ray Robinson did his...
Remember when Tyson went in 2000?
Yeah. But you know, he wasn't champ. Sugar Ray was champ, and he went on a tour, and he ripped through. Tyson was
the people's champ.
Oh, the people's champ. No, Sugar Ray was the actual champ, yeah. And he went to Europe and just ripped through all those countries, knocking guys out like every other weekend. You know, if Canelo wants to take a page out of that book and do a Europe trip, eh, Chris Eubank makes sense. You go fight over Wembley.
He's on my list. He's on my list.
I think the top two, I think your list is perfect. I think Eubank and Mbili. I think it's going to be Mbili next, though. But
yeah, I mean, let's go through it right now. I have it listed here. I did a video yesterday. It's on our social media. It's like...
Good video. Check it out, guys.
Thanks, bro. Appreciate that. It's the only productive thing I did yesterday. Canelo opponents most likely to least likely, just according to what I think. Chris Eubank Jr., I think, could be next. Will it be in the UK where it makes way more sense financially is the question.
It's the only reason to do it.
Right, but I think Canelo would maybe do it in May because September is for Mexico. September is for Vegas. That's a much bigger date for Mexican fight fans than May. May is a fake Fugazi day.
Cinco de Mayo.
For us white gut people to go out to and get a margarita at your local taco stand. Chris Eubank in the UK. I mean, Eubank was in the running to fight this fight here in September, but he outpriced himself. He'd be
not what I heard. Not what I heard. Not what I heard. I heard it was always Berlanga.
Okay, well, maybe they used Eubank's name.
They used Eubank's, yes. 100%.
Okay, but bring him back into the fold, I would not be shocked. It's just my
listen, once you get mentioned, and once you get mentioned as an opponent, you're a potential opponent. That's you've now entered the fray.
Ben Shalom, the guy from Boxer, like Eddie Hearn's evil twin. That guy is going to be calling. He does look, he has an Eddie Hearn vibe to him. That guy is going to be calling Canelo and saying, let's go back to the negotiating table. Chris Eubank, big name, blah, blah, blah. That's what I think is next. After that, depending with an asterisk, if Dmitry Bivol beats Arthur Beterbiev, I can see Canelo going up and doing that one more time, even though we have talked about this numerous times. Big mistake. Don't know how he beats Bivol, especially if Bivol beats Beterbiev, who, you know, just he's even bigger and stronger. But think about that. Like Canelo, who is, in my mind, the undisputed champion at 168. I don't care what belts they take away from him. Going up against the undisputed champion at 175, retribution for his loss. I mean, that has all the storylines. I mean, that would be juicy and that would be fun. I probably should put that a little bit lower in terms of likeliest, but that's in there. Christian Mabili, I agree, Chris. Like Christian Mabili fits that Berlanga route where, hey, I'm number one in this division. I'm number one in that organization. Canelo can say, I have to fight this guy or I lose my belts. Diego Pacheco, same thing. He's number one in one of the, I think the WBA, I want to say. So I don't think Pacheco's ready. I don't think he brings enough to the table in terms of financials. Neither does Mabili, but at least people have seen Mabili more on ESPN, fan-friendly. The Plant rematch is certainly starting to look a little more appetizing. I mean, Plant, I thought, won the weekend. He looked so good against McCombie. Yeah, he went down early, but it just added to the intrigue.
What surprised me about Plant was his popularity. I didn't realize
he
was that big of a deal.
You know why?
I mean,
because he has his own YouTube page and he does his own content and he has an epilogue. He does like a 24/7. Like you know what also helps is like these altercations that he has with
fighters.
Ryan Garcia, you know, going after him. I know it's a pain in the ass, but if you think about it, Charlo slapping him, like, yeah, these things like just keep Plant in the.
Well, even him trying to slap Canelo at the press conference.
That too, the digging of the grave when he knocked out Durrell went right. Like insanely yeah. viral. I mean, this guy knows how to keep himself in the fray, and he's also very well respected. And he fought Canelo, he fought Benavidez, he didn't give up. I mean, he fought hard. He's one of the most respected fighters today between boxers and fans. So I wouldn't mind seeing a rematch. I think it'll be actually a better fight because Canelo being a little bit older, Plant.
I thought that was no way. Like nobody wanted to see that. And then I saw how popular he was this weekend. I was like, oh no, this could definitely happen.
Definitely on a short list. And then there's Crawford and Benavidez, which has been talked to death. I mean, those are
You know what I was thinking though, Dan? I brought this up yesterday. That you know, Canelo is coming into the area where he's gonna have to have rematches with Plant and Munguia. It's just a matter of time before one of these guys beats him. Like we're entering
second
that
time around.
Yeah, we're entering that. Look. Caleb Plant looked so good over the weekend. Yeah, he had his little troubles early. And it seemed to me that when he fought Canelo, he wasn't ready for the stage. He wasn't ready for that level of guy. And I think you learned a lot in that fight that he brought into the Benavidez fight. Because if he was the same guy who fought Canelo, he would have got stopped by Benavidez. Because he got beat up late, but he persevered through that. Where Canelo, he didn't. He crumbled under the pressure. But with... You know, since then, you know, he seems like he's learned a lot. You bring that into a rematch with Canelo, and now Canelo's 2-3 years older. Dude, Canelo's going to lose one of these days. Like, he's getting older. It's showing. Like, yeah, he looked great. Yes, he's the best guy in the division, I think. I think he's top of division, no question. I think most people would say that. Definitely one of the best fighters in the world today still. But dude is definitely not the same. And there are places to take over. You know, Father Time's real.
He doesn't really do rematches. He's only, rematched Golovkin. I can't think of any other rematch that he did. I mean, Mayweather had a few rematches in his career, especially late. He fought Maidana twice.
He had to because the Maidana fight was so, Maidana and Castillo were so disputed. He had to fight them again.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think a Plant rematch.
But the fight wasn't disputed. That's why Canelo can easily go, nope.
Yeah. But I think the Plant rematch makes a lot of sense, and the only thing it will be missing is the animosity, because the animosity was pretty freaking
now they're
awesome
hugging.
To build up. Now they're friends, hugging. And because Canelo respects him, just like Canelo respects Berlanga, who put up a good fight. He didn't embarrass himself. That's what I'll say about Berlanga. I don't think he went to win that fight at any moment besides the final minute of the 12th round, which I hate boxers do. Berlanga didn't embarrass himself, so therefore he's coming out of this looking good. He's coming out of this looking like he can go back to the drawing board, come back in February, fight at the theater against a soft touch, and then look for a big name, look for a Plant, look for a Munguia, Charlo, any of those names, because I do think he's a draw. I do think that he held up his end of the bargain when it comes to selling this fight. And in the ring, he was tough. He was very tough. He definitely didn't cower to Canelo's power. Didn't mean to rhyme there. But I do want to ask you this, Chris. It's reported by Shava, ESPN Salvador. Does a wonderful job over at ESPN Deportes. That Berlanga weighed 193 pounds on fight night. He gained 26 pounds from weigh-in to fight night, which is not shocking. If you're a boxing fan, you know that fighters do this. The reason that I think it's notable is because part of the reason that Canelo Alvarez says, I will not fight Benavidez, not the only reason, but part of the reason, is that he just is going to gain 25 pounds on fight night. He's too big. He said this himself. Canelo said this himself. But so he doesn't have a problem with Berlanga gaining 25 pounds, but he has a problem with Benavidez gaining 25 pounds. I just don't think that really looked is a good look for Canelo. But to your point, he's going to start retracting his statements a lot. They got to do so many damn interviews. But 193 on fight night.
No shit. He's willing to fight the bigger Berlanga, not the bigger Benavidez. They're different classes of guys. But Benavidez is on another planet to Berlanga in terms of his skills. Then you add the fact that he's going to be 195 pounds in the ring. It's a tall order for Benavidez. You really can't compare the two. You know, Benavidez has been a world champion. Benavidez has fought world class guys. That was Berlanga's very first title fight, very first fight anywhere near that level. So he's picking on the young guys for sure. You know, the young guys with the sterling records. You know, there's no question about that. You fight Munguia in a couple years, Munguia is a real problem. You know, so he's getting these guys early for a reason. He's being very, very smart and tactical in that sense. With Benavidez, it's a whole different animal. Benavidez is a much higher caliber fighter based on his experience. So that doesn't surprise me at all. But even Canelo said in the ring afterwards, he was like, "Oh, you guys give me you know grief about this." He's like, "I fight the bigger guys. I fought the bigger guys." I'm like, we're not saying that. You said that. Exactly. You don't want to fight the bigger guys. We didn't
want to see you fight Benavidez. Like,
that's right. We just want you to fight one guy.
One guy. Like, no one's saying, "Oh my God, Canelo, you haven't fought a young guy in so long." I haven't heard that. Right?
We didn't fight a young guy. We didn't say you didn't fight an undefeated guy. We didn't say you didn't fight a big guy. We just didn't. You didn't fight one guy. It's just one guy that we want.
Yeah, and I posted that yesterday, and it made the rounds, and so I had to deal with the notifications all day of Canelo lovers thinking that I was trying to put Canelo down, the Benavidez fans out there, the people that are against Canelo, and then also that section of boxing fans that say, "Look, Canelo's a boss, and Benavidez is disrespecting him. His dad disrespects him."
Oh, stop.
That's
such bullshit.
That's the silliest thing I ever heard.
I understand
that Canelo can choose who he wants to fight. He's like one of one or one of a small amount of fighters that can literally choose who they want to fight. So maybe there's a tiny bit of truth in that he doesn't like the way that Benavidez has been talking about him. But, you know, Benavidez was the mandatory for years. And this is a former champion. Or the people that bring up the fact, this guy failed cocaine and this guy lost his belt on the scale. Yes, those were both true. But we're just going to hold that against him for the rest of his career? So you're telling me you don't want to see a great fight between Benavidez and Canelo because of a few mistakes that Benavidez made when he was 20 years old or when he was fighting in the bubble and couldn't make the weight? I think that's absolutely absurd. And that's just fandom. That's just Canelo absolute lovers out there. I don't know why we're even spending this much time on it because I'm losing hope that he fights Benavidez. But I thought it was a little interesting to see Berlanga go to 193. Which is essentially 25 pounds. It is 25 pounds, which is something that he did not want to see Benavidez do. If he ever does fight Benavidez, I do think there will be a hydration clause.
Oh, yeah, big one.
A rehydration clause. And I don't think fans will care as much as
Benavidez.
Tank and Ryan.
Neither will Benavidez. He will sign on the dotted line, no problem.
Yes, Benavidez will go down to 168 in a second. He will do the rehydration clause in a second.
He'll probably take short money. He doesn't care.
Yes, $5 million, he said, which is not exactly short money, but it's not like it's not the the pot for that fight is going to be huge. That's going to do over a million pay-per-view buys. That's going to do.
I don't know why he put out a number for that though.
You're he's desperate, man.
I know, so, but it didn't work, and now you're really stuck in there.
He wants to win over the court of public opinion, which he has. But that's with that's the last on Canelo. We'll he's not going to fight again till May. They were talking about Japan in December, but I doubt it. I mean, that was more of a grueling fight. This isn't the Canelo of 4 years ago where you fought four times in 1 year. Like, he needs to take time off. Right? He's not fighting in Japan.
No. No way. May. It'll be May.
May. So we'll see Canelo next May, and then we'll have to do this whole sweepstakes all over again. All right, let's get into it. This weekend, I am so excited for a proper heavyweight fight. Anthony Joshua, Daniel Dubois, 96,000 fans in attendance at Wembley Stadium. Joshua back where he belongs. A fight that belongs at Wembley Stadium, a domestic clash. Anthony Joshua, think about it, man. He has been back from the dead. I mean, the losses to Ruiz, the
Both guys, actually.
I know. The storylines are incredible. Joshua, back from the dead. The losses to Ruiz, the double losses to Usyk, building himself back up, getting a new trainer, now becoming the most powerful heavyweight in boxing, in my opinion. Then you have Daniel Dubois, who was labeled a quitter.
Back from disgrace. Back from disgrace. Joshua back from the dead. Dubois back from disgrace.
Dubois back from being labeled a quitter against Joe Joyce, broken orbital bone. He tore his ACL against Kevin Lorena. He goes on and he beats Jarrell Miller, who bullied him all fight week long. He beats Hrgovic, who said some just nasty things about it, called him a little boy. And then he gets in there with Usyk and, you know, fights him tough, but ultimately loses to Usyk just like everyone else does. But finds himself back in the mix, deserving of this fight. Joshua, deserving of a chance to become a three-time heavyweight champion. Chris, this fight is amazing. This fight is a proper heavyweight fight. I can't wait.
Proper heavyweight fight. Fight I've been looking forward to quite a bit. Maybe a little under the radar on this side of the world for American fans, but obviously going to be a big deal out there. They're expecting 100,000, close to it. So fantastic fight. Well, so this is one of those heavyweight fights where you're going to watch on pins and needles because they're both destructive punchers. And say what you will about Joshua. He's a fantastic fighter, awesome technician, probably the best puncher in the world today. But man, that chin, it can be shaky. And Dubois has shown durability in recent years. Maybe not mentally, but he's shown it definitely physically. And the guy can punch. He's got, what does he have? How many decisions does he have? One? What does he have? One decision?
I can pull it up now.
You know, the guy is
21-2 with 20 knockouts.
Yeah, he's got one decision. He's a brutal, brutal puncher. And has been with top-level opposition. And I think he's turned a corner. We've talked about that quite a bit on our shows in terms of Dubois' his psyche, where he's come and where he's come from and where he's at now. I think that Jarrell Miller fight was a big turnaround for him. You got a guy bullying him, and he was able to power through that and score a stoppage of a guy who was really, really tough to stop. And they got Hrgovic, where, I mean, I was picking him to lose. And Hrgovic landed some big right hands early. And Dubois walked through all of it and broke Dubois. Broke him down the stretch. Broke Hrgovic, excuse me, down the stretch. So it was like the bully getting bullied by, you know, the nerd, quote unquote.
Yeah, it was awesome. And I mean, very, I think Dubois' awesome. Career arc has been awesome to watch. He's like not the biggest trash talker. He really tries, though, which is funny because he's not really good at it. And that's what kind of adds to his charm. Probably the worst boxer today, Danny Dubois. With the French cuff not cuffed, with the leather jacket over the leggings, that's fine. Like, this isn't a fashion contest, it's a boxing match. I love his story, obviously love Joshua's story too. Some stats here. This is from Lee Groves. They boast a combined 45 knockouts in their 49 wins, but three of their five defeats have been KO losses.
Yeah.
So that they have power, and they also have like faulty chins, which makes it even more exciting to watch. Like, they're going to be walking that tightrope. Like, two large men with leaky chins, Chris.
Well, that was exactly my point about watching this fight on pins and needles. Because, don't go get a beer during this fight. Anything can happen with these guys. They can both crack.
Yeah. But going to Joshua now, what a career. I think his respect level should be through the roof for boxing fans, persevering while being one of the three faces of boxing, certainly the face of British boxing, and
yes,
led the resurgence. I mean, fighters over in the UK look at this guy like he's their leader. Like, look at this guy. Like, you're the one that brought it back. Like, you're the one that put Wembley back on the map and fought in front of all the Klitschko's, you know, won the heavyweight title, became a big star. So I think he's beloved by British boxers. I think he's obviously beloved by British fans. He should be beloved by all boxing fans for how he's handled himself, how he's rebuilt his career, a real student of the game, like a throwback fighter, because his resume is getting – he has the best resume of any heavyweight. Like, it's better than Fury's. Yeah. It's better than Usyk's is pretty damn good, too. I think Joshua's is up there because he's fought literally everyone. Dubois now, you add him to the list. Like, the only person he hasn't fought is Tyson Fury, and I expect that to happen because of Riyadh season and all that. But how about this? Beyond the potential record-setting crowd, Joshua – he's hoping to join Muhammad Ali, Vitaly Klitschko, Michael Moore, and Lennox Lewis as men who've won a share of the heavyweight title 3 times.
Wow.
Holyfield holds the mark, who won it 4 separate times. That right there is so impressive, Chris, is winning the title 3 separate times, especially in today's day and age where you have to fight back with the politics. You have to make sure you're aligned properly. 3-time heavyweight champ if Joshua wins. That's a pretty cool distinction.
No, it's historic. It's not just, you know, a cool distinction. Like, literally you're entering the conversation with all-time greats. And you know, I think he'll be there. Like you said, he's been an absolute megastar over there. But I mean, he's done a lot for this sport, a lot for British boxing. He's been around a long time, even though he's not that old. But
34.
Yeah, that's, you know, for heavyweights, that's not that old.
34, he's fought Francis Ngannou, Otto Wallin, Hillianis, Jermyn Franklin, Usyk twice, Pulev, Ruiz, Povetkin, Parker, Takam, Klitschko, Brazil, Charles Martin, Dillian White. Good God.
Good God is right.
And he's come out on top, and for the most part. And he's been ridiculed. There was a time where we were questioning his psyche every other week. He changed trainers, which I thought was a big move, twice. He changed trainers from Rob McCracken, who was his trainer from early on in his amateur days, Olympic days, to the pros. Then he went with Robert Garcia, and that didn't work. Then he went with Derek James, and that didn't work. And now it is working because he is with Ben Davison. Ben Davison
it is working. It is working.
Definitely working. Because, Chris, you can attest to this as the fighter here on the panel, is that I think he's figured out the perfect distribution of power and jabs. It took him a while because for a while, big talking point with Joshua is that after Klitschko, he became so cautious. And after Ruiz, he became so cautious where he's throwing 70% jabs. And he was just trying to protect that chin, trying to protect the money, trying to protect his reputation. But now, you know, after Robert Garcia and after Derek James, I think he learned stuff from them too. But now with Davison, now he's back to throwing 60% power shots, the right distribution, 60-40 from jab power to jabs. And, I mean, he's knocking guys out, and he looks really freaking good.
Well, I think also with Davidson, you've got a coach who trains the fighter, not a style. And he looks at a guy like Anthony Joshua, and he can do everything. But when you feel the power on that right hand, you go, whoa, 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 why are we not throwing this? Why are we not using the jab to set this thing up instead of just using the jab to score points and defend? And I think that's been the major difference we've seen. Now he's just setting up that cannon that is that right hand. He's always been a good jabber. He's a very, very good jabber, but he's now using it to set up the right hands. And that's the big difference. When you got Anthony Joshua landing right hands, he beats everybody in the world because the guy, I mean, he's got a cannon for an arm and he's big. He can box. He's got great technique. You know, you look up photos of him knocking out Ngannou, like you're looking at a perfect technical precision. Technical stance, everything, his hand position, everything. You know, the guy does everything right. So, but I think more so even than that, from a technical aspect, for what Ben Davidson is bringing to Anthony Joshua is psychology. I think he's got him feeling comfortable in his own skin, which I think is something that with these past couple coaches wasn't the case. I think that Joshua is the kind of guy, he doesn't need to be uncomfortable in camp. He needs to be comfortable. He needs to feel at home. He needs to feel, you know, like he's getting attention and that, you know, they're focused on him and you don't need to break him and build him back up. He's already there. You need him to go out there and just be what he is because the guy is an absolute specimen and he hits you with the right hand. He can knock out anybody in the world.
Yeah. And he's been doing that. I mean, his last 5 fights, Ngannou, which, you know, was kind of like whatever, but I like the fact that he just handled business.
Yeah, but he got that back for us because there were so many boxing people that were like, Tyson Fury let us down, and then Joshua did what Tyson was supposed to do. So he got one back for team boxing.
And I love how he knocks him out, but he didn't like celebrate. He handled it properly, and he made Fury look like a buffoon. Yep. Fury made himself look like a buffoon with his Ngannou performance, and then Joshua coming back and just doing that made him look even better. So that adds to why I believe he's, you know, even more respected. Then he fought Otto Wallin, which was a nice stoppage. Wallin
is a tough guy to look good against. No one does it. Tyson Fury struggled with him mightily. He had just caught off a good fight with Gassiev, who's really, really tough. A good win over Gassiev. So Wallin, that was a better win than you would think.
Right. Then the Franklin win, which he went the distance. Not that good. Was when we were still questioning him. That was his first fight after Usyk, the two Usyk fights, where, you know, in hindsight, are looking like pretty good performances. Usyk is Usyk. He's the best heavyweight of this era.
Especially the second one. Looked really good in the second one.
Right. First one, didn't look as good. Second one, I thought Joshua was right in the mix, but Usyk just does what Usyk does.
I think he was just shocked in the first one, and the second one, he brought his A game, did really, really well, and it was a good close fight.
Still shocked, too. Whenever in the ring, he grabbed the mic and hip, hip, hooray, and he just was so shocked. You were on the call. I remember you said that was weird because he couldn't believe I trained my ass off. I gave everything I possibly had, and I just still can't beat you. Like, that was a crazy moment in the ring because that you're just seeing like Joshua be a little vulnerable there, and like that goes to
that was a full on mental breakdown. Full on.
Well, do you?
He never really expected to lose to the same guy twice.
I don't blame him because of the scrutiny that this guy's constantly under.
The going up against
a guy in Usyk. What'd you say?
The pressure is crazy for Anthony Joshua. Always has been. Always has been.
The whole country looking at him. And I think that kind of like went away after the Ruiz loss. And then he had to build it back up. Like, he's not like the same type of pressure. But that's why I think he's way more comfortable now. Got the right trainer, the right mindset. You know, he's 34. He's been around the block. Has the great resume. The last five for Dubois, really impressive too. Hrgović win. Miller win. Usyk with the whole low blow body shot, whatever. He fought decent and then until he didn't. Kevin Lorena, I know that was kind of like a joke type of fight, but tore his ACL early on in the fight and then still managed to get the stoppage. That's not easy. Trevor Bryan, that was like for a secondary WBA belt. But Dubois obviously throwing that Joyce fight, which wasn't in his last five fights. The Joyce fight was tough. Guy was up on the cards, took a knee, got crucified for taking a knee, but he had a broken orbital bone and nerve damage in his eye. And that was at what, age 23, 24?
I went to bat for him, and you know he was getting crushed. And like I've had that injury. It's horrible. It's really it's scary. You don't know. You know, it's nothing you could ever feel. You never felt before. It's a very scary injury. And also, you could end your career on something like that. You got a bad orbital break, and you keep going. That thing keeps getting hit. Very, very possible for you to have a career-ending injury. Look at remember Margarito with Pacquiao. Yeah. Pacquiao ended his career, well, essentially. He never really won a fight after that because his orbital was so fractured and the vision in his eye was super, super deteriorated. So, yeah, I don't knock him for that. And anyone who does has never been in a fight, never been punched in their eye that hard that there's bones broken in your face. You're literally breaking your skull, guys. So
it's crazy.
And he
came back from that.
He came back from that.
He could have literally left the sport. I mean, he was super young at the time. He was really heralded. I remember hearing about him early on and being like, oh, this is like the next Joshua. Like, look at the size of this guy. He's beating people down. He's soft-spoken. He's had an up-and-down career, and now he's at Wembley, like proper – keep saying proper because that's like a British word, right? Proper dust-up. The proper dust-up.
Yeah, proper dust-up. They like saying that.
Let's go to the odds according to DraftKings Sportsbook. The odds right now, Joshua, a sizable favorite, -425. Not really giving Dubois any respect here. Over under 7.5. That's even. Dubois by knockout +475. I'd throw some.
Dude, if I wanted to take a risk, I would bet money on Dubois.
Joshua by decision +550. So Vegas really thinks that this is going to be a stoppage.
I think so too. What's Dubois by KO?
Dubois by KO is +475.
I might throw 100 on that. You never know.
Oh, by the way,
heavyweight boxing, man. That's why if you're gonna bet heavyweight boxing, man, you want to get risky.
By the way, when I did my hits for DraftKings on the Canelo broadcast, I told everyone at the end, Canelo to knock down Berlanga once, and then the decision.
I know, dude.
Which is so cool because I like giving out picks on Twitter.
Wait, I thought you said twice. You said one or two.
No, I had two props. The one and the two, like the knockdown twice, was plus 450.
Oh, so you said both.
Both. I said, you know, more likely is going to be the once down and the decision, which has been his last two fights. That was cool. But let's see. Yeah. So Joshua by decision is plus 550. So I don't think it's going the distance. Someone's getting knocked out.
Yeah, agreed.
I think Joshua's going to win, obviously.
I do too. I think Joshua stops him in 8 to 10.
Let's see what those odds are. I love round like group betting in terms of rounds. Joshua 7. Oh, it doesn't have. Wait, yeah. Joshua 7 through 12 plus 165. Not huge.
Not great. Yeah, because it's
the odds on the second half are never good because that's when they figure guys wear it down and it's always the 1 through 6, which is
especially
only
heavyweights.
Especially the heavyweights. That is the heavyweight fight this weekend. All eyes will be there during the afternoon. And then at night, we will see Jaime Munguia. You'll be on the call.
No, Munguia is on Friday.
Munguia is Friday?
Munguia is Friday.
Wow, that's awesome. Going to the full card here for Joshua.
Which I think was probably smart and tactical because of the Joshua
top rank. It's good when it comes to that. Dubois versus Joshua's main event. Tyler Denny versus Hamza Shariz, who is a good-looking middleweight that many think could take over the middleweight division. Anthony Cassis versus Josh Warrington, we thought was for the IBF title, which Cassis took off of Cordina. But IBF being the IBF doesn't mess around. He was supposed to fight. He's mandatory. So the IBF title is not on the line. If he wins, he keeps it. If he loses, it's gone. I expect Cassis to beat Warrington. That'd be a good fight. Josh
Warrington's just not made for that weight. He's just Warrington's not made for 130.
Just recycle this guy over and over, Warrington. Like, I feel like he's almost fighting against his will at this point. Like, they just keep putting him in there. He's gonna do his headbutts. Like, he's gonna fight. Yeah. He's fought Lee Wood a million times. He's fought all they just recycle him because he's a name. Tough as hell, that guy. Josh Kelly was supposed to fight Liam Smith, but Liam Smith is off his. Ishmael.
Yeah, I didn't see that fight happening. I had a feeling Liam Smith. I didn't see him making it to that.
I know
there was press conferences and he looked like he weighed 200 pounds.
He is fully gray, makes him look a little bit older. He's been fighting forever. He had that resurgence when he beat Eubank, but he's out. Josh Kelly, a good looking young fighter at middle. Joshua Boazzi.
Yeah, it's a good fight. Willie Hutchinson. Willie Hutchinson's tough, dude. That's a fight. That's
and
a good
Mike
fight.
Chamberlain, Josh Padley. It's a very, like, this was heralded as it was going to be a huge fight card. It's a very British fight card, obviously. The Brits are going to like it. It's not a bad undercard.
It's a good undercard, but it's Brit heavy. It's going to be a tough sell over here.
It's not going to be up to the level of, like, some of the other Riyadh cards. But
I think Boazzi, Hutchinson, other than the main event, steals the show. Because the main event's awesome. I think the main event's going to be amazing. Hamza Shiraz is phenomenal coming off that huge win. Yeah. Kakachi and Warrington, I think it'll be fun. It's going to be like a slobber knocker, you know, back and forth. But
yeah, that's Warrington, your blood. Think, if you want to see blood and you want to see guts, tune in for
that. Yeah, guts. Because Warrington he's got a ton of heart.
I just want to hear the roar of the crowd. Like, it's been so long. Be there. Like, 20,000. It was loud for Canelo. It's 20,000. Like, it was loud.
When he fought Saunders, I think it was 80,000.
Yeah.
That was nuts.
The loudest, I was at Spence, Mikey Garcia at Cowboy Stadium. That was like 50. Mm. And I remember being like, wow, that's some of the loudest I've ever heard. I'm very excited to see the pageantry. I'm very excited to see Wembley. It's been too long. The one knock on Riyadh season, or there's a lot of knocks now as we're getting deeper into it, was the
crickets.
The atmosphere. Crowd atmosphere was kind of lame. Credit to Turkey for bringing this to Wembley. I think he will now get a taste of a live gate and the money that generates there. I think it's going to do really good pay-per-view numbers in the UK. So that might actually make a buck. Turkey might actually look at his budget sheet for this one and be like, Wow, we didn't lose $10 million. That's great. So that is
wonderful. Business.
Wonderful. He's gonna make some money on this fight. Friday night, we have our guy Jaime Munguia. Love that he's back. Love that he's mm-hmm. with Top Rank. Mm-hmm. Love that he's mm-hmm. active. I think he's primed for his second part of his career. You know, you got your loss to Canelo out of the way. You made your bag. You have a new promoter. I think Top Rank and Munguia is like a match made in heaven. And it's a great fight. And you'll be on the call with International.
Poncher. Yeah, International, Christina Poncher. Yeah, I'm flying out tomorrow night. Good Headed God. To Glendale, Arizona.
That's kind of fun, though. It's nice.
First
stairs.
Time. I heard it's a great place.
Arizona's awesome, and the weather, I feel like it won't be that super hot, but I could be wrong. What do you know about Eric Bazinian?
So I know a lot about him. It's not an easy fight, dude. Eric Bazinian can fight. He's got a good amateur background. He's Armenian, so you know he's going to be strong as hell. He's got a really nice 1-2, good jab, very right-hand heavy, very 1-2, very European style, stiff, straight up, good in and out. Earmuff style on defense. Mm. So a lot of openings for Munguia because he's so dynamic, but he's going to get hit because Bazinian does a really good job threading the needle with the right hand. He punches right through the guard. He loops his right hand. He throws it straight. He varies it up pretty nice. He jabs the body good, comes over the top with the right hand. Good technique. Like I said, very, very European in his style, physically strong, just not as dynamic. So I think it's going to be pretty hairy early on for Munguia. And then he's going to have to roar back like he always does and finish strong and throw a million body shots. So I think it's actually a pretty decent fight.
Yeah, Friday night on ESPN, main event, Munguia back in the mix. Should get himself into some big fights with a win. I think a Billy Munguia fight could be in the works.
That's gangbusters, dude. That's gangbusters.
That's as famous as can get.
But that's the only way that happens is if, you know, Chris Eubank is the opponent for Canelo. Because
– right.
When Billy is going to be, he's going to hold out until that date.
Oh, they're going to, yeah, that's the one downfall of the Canelo sweepstakes is it holds up a lot of things.
Yeah, because, and he doesn't care. He'll for this fight, like Berlanga, what they announced 7 weeks out?
Yeah.
Yeah, he doesn't care.
Yeah, Munguia should get himself in the mix for some big fights at 168. Still think he could be a champ at 168. He's coming into his prime. Emiliano Vargas on the card, Richard Torres. Yeah.
Emiliano Vargas fighting my old sparring partner, Larry Fryers.
Dude, Larry Fryers has been, I remember around.
He's been around.
His fights on Broadway Boxing. Just a Irish brawler.
Yep. Irish tough guy. Lunch pail. He leaves his lunch pail in the back. he's coming to bang you with right hands and hooks.
Yep.
Take some shots on the way in.
I like Emiliano Vargas, star. Richard Torres.
He's awesome.
I think stepping
Torres is a tough fight. DeWico's a tough customer, dude.
Good.
Joey DeWico can fight.
Let's get Torres going here because, I mean, it was Jared Anderson as the next great hope. Like, Torres, he's just a little undersized, but I was watching something last night on ESPN Plus. I had it on after the Monday Night Football game, and it was the Jaime Munguia special that you were on. And then it was this, like, really cool special feature with Nico Ali Walsh and Richard Torres interviewing each other.
Oh, and they were sitting on a couch, right?
It was freaking great. Like, I would never watch that.
It was like Dumb and Dumber. It was hilarious.
I would never watch that unless it was just like on somewhere. Like, I had it on as I was like falling asleep. But
no, not Dumb and Dumber. It was more like Step Brothers. It was like, did we just become best friends?
Right.
Like, that's exactly what it was.
Hilarious. I know Torres is hilarious. Like, his social media presence is
apparently
awesome.
Nico is too. They were funny.
I mean, this kid has it. Let's be honest. He's I understand what Top Rank is using the Ali thing and ESPN loves it. Like, he doesn't love it, but he's using it. But you could just tell that he's just a normal kid and he's very funny. And he actually made a really interesting comment on this thing that, like, if it was up to him, like if his Ali wasn't attached to his name and he didn't have to act a certain way and live up to the Ali name and the reputation, he goes, I'd be a Ryan Garcia because I'd be reckless. I'd say anything I want. Mm. And I'm like, just do that, man. Like, let it go.
Not for nothing, Ali did. His grandpa
would want this.
Yeah, that's what he did. His nickname was the Louisville Lip. He said what the hell he wanted.
I know. And I think that was like, came out a little bit in Ali Walsh's last fight where he kind of was chirping at Jake Paul and chirping. I could have went the influencer route, but I'm trying to be a real fighter. I don't know. I thought it was pretty cool. Top Rank does a really good job with their original content. That's really it. We should have a fun one Saturday night. Order it on ppv.com.
Well, Saturday early evening.
Yeah, so you can have a night out too.
I will have a night in my bed sleeping.
Yeah, what are you leaving Saturday morning?
Yeah, early 7 a.m. Saturday morning. I land like 4.
No red eye?
No, not. There wasn't anything available from Phoenix, but so I'm getting out quite nice and early.
I know you definitely checked. All right, everybody, thank you for joining once again. This we won't have a show later in the week because of all of our travel. I'm headed to the John Boy Media Warehouse to record Blitzball Battle 5. I don't know how. I'm very tired from Vegas. It's going to be blood and guts from Dan. It's going to be my
Dan. Dan, I didn't know you were a warrior, Dan. You got that. You're a blood and guts warrior now?
Another hotel.
Digging deep?
3 weeks in a row in a hotel. I'm not complaining because this is quite a life. But Orlando, Vegas, and now Jersey City. What a life. Everyone, enjoy. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening for the last 7 years. It's amazing. Inside Boxing Live, the best boxing podcast in the world. We out.
Feel the rush. Live thoroughbred racing is happening now at Laurel Park, the Players Track. Every Friday through Sunday, the gates open at 11 a.m. and the action starts at noon. Free admission, fast-paced racing, and real wagering excitement from start to finish. Pick your horses, place your bets, chase the win. From live racing and simulcast action to great food, special events, and nonstop sports viewing, Laurel Park is where the action lives. Come, win, play. Visit laurelpark.com.